All right, about time we're going to get started. So in this session, I'm going to talk to you about building a modern portal with Azure and Office 365. I've been a SharePoint MVP and MCM for many years and built lots of SharePoint intranets, and I guess I've seen a lot of really boring intranets. Weather web parts, stock tickers, all this stuff where you're just yelling policies and procedures at people. News that got updated, you know, when the portal first launched and then nobody ever updated it afterwards and it's 3 years old on the homepage. And dealt with a lot of, you know, wars. What's going to go on the homepage? What should go here? And I guess I think we've changed a lot in how we work over the past few years. I remember my first job in IT when I had a computer, like one of those ones that sits under your desk, and I'd come into work and, now I have a Surface and a phone and I access things everywhere I go. I'm always wanting to get to my information and I'm a lot more agile and rapid in how I work. And what I think we should be doing is building portals that are the centre of people's workday. It should be something that provides useful contextual information to them, so it's not just a place they go to see the boring company news and they shut it down as soon as it pops up as their homepage on their browser. We'll talk through some of the awesome features Office 365 has got for that, and then we'll talk about how we can augment what you get out of the box by putting Azure on top and some of the reasons you might want to do those bits and pieces. So let's just jump straight into a demo and we'll switch across and we'll show some of the native out-of-the-box bits and pieces. So this is just easy stuff, right? This is a modern team site. It's one of the brand new features that have come through, but I think it's really compelling for a team scenario. You can see here we had on this homepage just this ability to add team news. Down the bottom we can see the activity that's happening, so all the things that recently changed in the team site, and if I resize the page it actually, you know, responds pretty well across all different browsers and all different devices. More importantly, this comes down to the SharePoint app as well. So if I'm a team member here at a conference like Ignite, what I can do is I can say, you know, here's a picture of the session I'm at. Take a picture, upload it to Team News, and instantly everyone in the team's getting that information and they can see it straight away. The important thing about that is the easier we make it for end users to get this information into a portal, the more likely they are to share this information. And this is just, you know, a nice free native feature. So that's one of the most common things that we're seeing now, a lot of people moving over to modern pages. If you do actually have an older team site that, you know, looks like one of the ones we'll look at in a minute, you can actually enable these modern pages and put them on top as well. You don't get the news feature, that's only if you're in a site tied up to an Office 365 group, but even the normal old team sites can have these nice pages. And if we look at how easy they are now to edit, I'm a terrible typer, but you can see I just get really easy options. If I want to embed a document, it'll give me a list of my recent documents. I can just upload something and put it in there very quickly and easily. But if we just choose perhaps a recent presentation, put it in the home page, when it loads up and puts it on there, I can then control which slide I want to show. I can add other widgets as well, like the Power BI, that seems to be running a bit slowly. We might just cancel that. Plenty of other little options here, like a document, news headlines, the trending charts. I can also put Power BI in there as the preview web part has come through. You can see while I was automatically typing, it's actually saved the page for me without having to push any buttons. And then if I publish it, it goes through onto the home page. I've spent countless hours teaching end users how to edit old school SharePoint pages. This is really easy for people to use. So highly recommended, just nice little feature. Plus you get a whole bunch of all these other things. So I've just created a list here called Team Lunches. Basically a list, you can see I've got an order name, a selection field, which I misspelled, some chips and a drink. And then I can go and I can create these things called Power Apps. And what Power Apps are nice little productivity apps that sit on top of these lists and basically allow me to control the UI. And this is designed to be kind of a power user feature to be able to build these up. What you'll see in a minute is it's automatically going to grab all those fields in the list, and it's going there, it's having a look at what these fields are, and it's doing an intelligent job of trying to work out what the correct controls are to render all these bits and pieces. And then it's going to give me a bunch of different screens. So it'll give me a list screen. It'll give me the ability to search for items that are already entered. It'll give me the ability then to have an edit form and all the other pieces on top. This sort of stuff used to take like weeks to develop. And with a few clicks of a button, I can now have this added and integrated into my site. This functionality is really great because, you know, as a developer, you don't want to be building these boring little tiny applications. We want to spend our time building exciting big things. So all these tiny little, I want to register for a conference or we need RSVPs for an event we're running, they can just be automatically built up with this. And you can see then when I get controls, so I can, you know, change the layout into a different form. I can pick each different one. I could remove fields. And then if we just hit the button on it, it'll give me this UI. So I can select, take a moment to load the data. And, you know, very, very easy sort of stuff. And then it loads it into the list. Of course, my order. And it's automatically adding all the normal stuff we expect from SharePoint, like who entered it, when it was entered, and all those bits and pieces. Then back on that list, of course, I have the capability to do all the other things, like export that list to Excel, or I can add a flow on top that might pick up that information, push it through to a business system. Think about all the things that you can do in those intranet scenarios with these nice little apps. I also get a lot of contextual information. So the things we were talking about earlier about kind of pushing relevant information at people and being able to do them, Office 365 offers a lot of them out of the box. So here's my SharePoint home where I can see the sites I've been accessing frequently. I can pin particular sites so that they always appear here even if I haven't been to them. But not only does it show me what I went to recently, it shows me why. You can see here things that I've modified, you know, whether I've uploaded them, whether I created them, whether I just viewed the content or whether someone else modified something that I'd been accessing. Super easy contextual information at the click of a button. That goes through to things like Delve, where I also can see my recent documents, but then I can actually navigate in a people-based view of seeing other people's documents as well. We have the video portal. We have OneDrive, which now provides a discover view of files all across our site. So not only do I have a site-based view, but if I'm more a file-based browser, I can go here and see all my relevant items. And then I have my favourite feature, which I'm doing another session on, called Office 365 Groups, which links together conversations, calendars, files, notebooks, and gives us a way to connect external data in there as well. So all of that's nice and cool, but they're just tiny little features that we've talked through. The trick is you've got to combine these, right, into a big compelling portal. And what I'm finding with a lot of these Office 365 based portals, suddenly people have gone, oh, this is cloud, I can just click things and that's how I'll deploy. That's okay, but a lot of these portals are really complex and big, and what happens when you want to test something on another tenancy? What happens when people want five more of the sorts of sites that you created on day one? Automation of this stuff is actually pretty easy. So here I've got a boring basic team site, and if I just go back to my PowerShell window, what I'm going to do is I'm going to run, actually, just to prove this is not a fake demo, when I resize it, whoops, am I getting there? Sorry. Nothing exciting happens on that site, right? It's just a stock standard site. Okay, so we are going to actually apply something from the patterns and practices team, Microsoft Office 365, called the PMP Responsive UI. Then I'm actually going to set a theme on there as well. I'm going to add a list once that completes. I'll give it a second. and then we can do some other operations. So while that's running, we should now, if we refresh, start to see a few different artifacts appearing. What the responsive UI does is it provides us a menu so that when we shrink down this normal team site, we'll actually start to be able to see some capabilities where we're getting these menu items appearing, sliding in and out. And it looks like we've got a very slow internet connection, so we might just keep going on with applying things and then load it at the end. We'll add a list as well, and we'll see how our site went loading. All right, one more try. Hopefully we get it this time. If this works, we should see it all turn a nice ugly green. We should have a list called Great List, and we've got a couple of fields automatically added to that list. So that's all good. That's a nice, easy way to deploy one or two sites. But what we do a lot of where we work is we'll often have business analysts working with users, clicking around, configuring sites, and, you know, doing a rapid prototype of what they want. And so the next problem with that is then trying to work out how you get something hand-clicked out into a configuration file. Well, that's great. I think it's... try it in that one there. What we want to do is try to export that out into a configuration file and apply that to other sites. So we'll actually try that at the same time. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to connect to Demo 2, which is the second site that we've got running here, which is exactly the same as how the first one looked. And this time we're going to apply a template that you can see there. This template has just been exported from a site that I hand-clicked together. It's exported into an XML file, and you do have another couple of formats you can use. And then I'm picking up that actual file, and it applies it piece to piece to the site. But it's really intelligent in that if it detects, for example, that I've already gone and added a list with the same name, it will error for me. If I've already, you know, added a field with the same name, it'll error as well, so it won't actually just double provide, but it'll keep going with the next activity so that you can actually use it to do quite a good differential. Let's see, we're not really getting anywhere with that, so let's just close that, and I'll just try another... going to be one of those demos. Close all. Edge. Okay, yay! All right, we've got our green side. I know it's basic. You can see it here. It's all turned to green. We added this list down this side called Great List in there. It's got a custom field called Location, which I added as a drop-down. And hopefully, if we resize it... Oh, sorry, we're just on the wrong... on the home page. We should... Yep, there's our menu that slides in and out now. Right, so a couple of lines of script, and I've now got a quite nice configured SharePoint site the way I wanted it. And if we load Demo 2, you'll see Demo 2 is exactly the same as Demo 1. So think about the capabilities of that. I've got a project site, perhaps, that I want to configure in a specific way. I want a library called Deliverables on my project site because that's where we're going to store all our project documents. I want to put some information about our process on the homepage, perhaps, and I want a specific brand. Maybe each business unit wants a different colour for those sites. They're the sort of activities we can do with this automatic provisioning kind of script. All right, so we'll switch back from our demo to the slides. Okay, that was pretty standard Office 365 stuff, and that's really good for a lot of my customers. We've got, you know, the ability to leverage a lot of the native features, and you always want to do that as much as possible. Do not build something that's already in the product. Equally, if someone comes to you and 85% of Office 365 suits them, you want to try to get them using those pieces because we tend to know that a lot of those, you know, a lot of those extra requirements, they may never get to and use either. But But don't forget the best practice, so make sure you're looking at how you automate this deployment. Just because it's a cloud-based system, it doesn't mean we can forget about how software development and deployments have worked for many years. Go to the Packet Patterns and Practices site. There is a wealth of information there, and it's often quite confronting where to start. So what I like about it, what I suggest, is start with the provisioning sample. Now, the beauty of that provisioning sample is the PowerShell commandlets that I used. I used the SharePoint Online version, obviously, for this demo. But there's a SharePoint 2016 and a SharePoint 2013 version of those as well. So if you're on-prem using SharePoint today, you can still use that same provisioning technique and prepare you for deployments to the cloud. Equally, it tends to be a bit more robust than the old feature provisioning way we used to work as well. So definitely worth looking at. But a lot of my customers, when they're looking at bigger portals, while it's great the level of change that you get in Office 365 with new features popping up, sometimes that can be very nerve-wracking for the marketing department that the brand might change on the homepage very often, or different pieces might pop up. Equally, portals are often about integrating a whole bunch of information from other systems, not just Office 365. Or you might have a need for geolocating information in different regions. And Office 365 doesn't offer a lot of that capability currently. So what happens then is you can actually look at augmenting that with putting Azure or another web-based system on top. So one of the first things we can do is all those features that you saw where we looked at Groups, Delve, OneDrive, all those bits and pieces, have the Graph API on top of them. And we can use that to pull that information out into pretty much any system that you're running. There's examples of this, not just on Azure, but iOS, Android, a lot of different languages, and I'll show you some of the SDKs in a minute that come with these samples. And we can just pick and choose it. So think about it, if you've got an intranet running in another technology, maybe people are storing documents in their OneDrive and you just want to pull a little feed of their OneDrive documents down onto your intranet and make it a little bit more interactive. Maybe you're just using the video portal piece and you want to pull some of those videos out and integrate them with another one of your business systems. Really great APIs for doing that kind of thing. Conversations, events, files, tasks, notes, a lot of wealth of bits and pieces. The tricky bit when you get into this space is actually going to be the authentication piece, because we are talking about kind of trying to jump between cross-domain systems. So one of the things you'll have to have a look at is a little bit of the wiring up for how to do this. And Microsoft, again, has pretty good SDKs that walks through a lot of these bits and pieces. Once you get through navigating the API, it's pretty easy. I'll show you some of the tools we can use to actually learn how to get this information and actually test these bits and pieces. But we can do a lot more than that, right? So that's really good for pulling these tiny little services out. But a lot of the intranets we're doing now, we're actually building solely on Azure App Service as the homepage. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about why that's good as a SharePoint developer. So we get some stuff for free. We get rapid development and toolset integration. We get easy continuous deployment, and we don't have to manage a server. You know, I've spent countless hours patching things, and it's really exciting that I can have a website just running that I don't have to worry about those bits and pieces, because it's not sitting on a service. It's a fully managed platform as a service offering from Microsoft. On top of the free service, there's then additional benefits we can pay a little bit more and then we can use. The staging feature. This is absolutely brilliant. So with one of the plans, and we'll talk through the different plans, you can have what are called slots. And I can deploy my code into this slot, which is hooked up to production data, test it there in a UAT, and switch that code over in a matter of seconds, and it will actually go live. If users report a bug, I can switch it back. I've dreamed of doing that with SharePoint for many years. It's almost impossible to do those kind of deployments. When we launched our portal at Empired using these features, all during the UAT period, we're actually doing live deployments multiple times during the day as people are reporting these minor issues through the large UAT that we were doing. It's SSL, custom domains. Geolocation is another really good one that you can use. And particularly if you're in, you know, a geo-dispersed kind of setup, lots of mining companies, international companies. With Azure, you can have websites that actually are located in different regions that then pull back to the single Office 365 tenancy. So it gives you a bit more control over that loading. Plus, we can automatically scale this. So with some of the features of Azure App Services, we can have it scale up and down based on parameters. You can choose whether that's based on load the system's having. You might base it on time. So particular days, you know you've got more load, and it will scale up and down. So how that works is if you're at the free or the shared level, you don't get any of those shiny things. You really just get this kind of instance that's 1 gigabyte storage, and you'll see the prices I've got up here are retail pricing based on, you know, current time, Jan 2017. So it's quite likely you actually might pay less than this if you're prepaying your service. Then we go up to the basic level where we now get the ability to do SSL. We can apply a custom domain and have up to 3 instances. And you'll see there's a few different options here with a lot of different bits of storage, various bits of RAM. When we go to the standard level, so S1, that first standard level, where we're getting 50 gigabytes of storage, custom domains, we can have 10 instances that auto-scale, it's going to back up for me daily, I've got 5 slots so I can do that staging thing, and I've got Traffic Manager to be able to do geo-availability. I spend more than $56 a month on coffee, and I'm getting that for that kind of price. Pretty amazing, pretty cheap feature there. There are really high tiers of this as well, where you start to get a lot more RAM, 20 slots, backing up 50 times daily. So, you know, really quick backups on that. Traffic managers there as well. Now, the portal that I'm actually going to show you is all built with client-side code. So that means we don't need a lot of those RAM and cores. It's mainly running on the client machine. So it's actually sitting on the standard S1 kind of setup. The reasons we typically go to this, so hybrid integration, you want to pull data from different systems. SharePoint Online only allows client-side code at the moment, and that can make it quite difficult if you're integrating a lot of different bits and pieces. Equally, sometimes you want to store information in different business systems or have a queue that you're going to actually run this information through. And I'll just talk through an example of where this kind of queuing mentality might be useful. So here's a news notification sample. Now, this is actually one of the samples from PMP as well, and there's actually a whole webcast that talks through this in detail. We're just going to cover it briefly. But this architecture, the way it works, is basically when an item's added to a news list, which you can see is in SharePoint Online in this example, the Logic app triggers an item created notification, which puts an item in the service bus queue, flows through Azure web Node.js running in there, and then is actually pushed into a SharePoint web part to provide an instant notification. And what that means is we can then click on that drop-down to see new items are available and the news appears. So if you think about your portal scenarios, you often get asked, how do we add a notification when we're going to have a system outage that's going to pop up onto the screen and kind of see those bits and pieces? In this example, we're actually pulling the information out of SharePoint, but that Logic App capability going through a service bus queue could really be any business systems that you can hook through, and you're then pushing that information, having it appear on your portal. Equally, the SharePoint framework web part at the front, again, could be any line of business system, really. It doesn't actually have to be a SharePoint Online example. It's just that this is quite easy to kind of set up. Now, the first reaction to people when they see this kind of stuff is, wow, this must be pretty complicated to set up and deploy. But other than the SharePoint framework piece, which is pretty new and takes people a little while to get used to, most of this is just deployed really easily through a single deployment piece. There's also the Office UI Fabric, which is a great bunch of branding, your artifacts from Microsoft, you can apply to your components that makes it look like Office 365 and other parts of the stack. So it means that you blend really nicely with their integration. And let's just have a look at some of these capabilities. So, see how we go. Just get that deploying in the back end. So the way this is all deployed is you can see it here in my Azure portal, and this is actually running in a completely separate instance, so I'm actually logged into this with a completely different domain and account to my Office 365 instance, just to show that they're completely disconnected at this point in time. In here, I've got the different components, so my Logic app, my Service Bus, and my web app, and these are the connections that my Service Bus is using. This is the actual Logic app here that we'll edit. Now, the reason that I use the Logic app is, again, back to that thing I talked about at the front, is I don't want to write boring code. I could use a webhook to hook this up as well. It just means that there'll be a little bit more programming involved. With a Logic app, when I set it up, the first thing it asks you is, what is the trigger? And all I had to do was select SharePoint, put in my site URL, authenticate to it, and then I get to pick how often I want it to poll SharePoint to basically grab those items from SharePoint. Then I go down, select send message, and in this case I'm sending a message to that Service Bus. But let's say I want to send to a completely different line of business system. You'll see like all the different connection pieces that I actually have down here, which is hugely comprehensive. And with each one of those, I can hook it up quite easily with this API and then hit run, and it will actually sit there and run. So in this case, every time an item's added to that SharePoint list, and I've just set this to kind of look every 10 minutes, it's then going to pick it up and throw it across to that next piece of our architecture. And we'll see whether that actually loaded. So So the way this works is you end up with a local site. So this is a way that I can basically debug and run this whole piece without having a server involved. So you'll see here I've just got mock data behind it. Again, as a SharePoint developer where you normally have to deploy and it's very difficult to make changes, that kind of setup's really good. Whereas here I'm actually running now in my Office 365 tenancy. This is the web part that I actually deployed. And there's actually a bug in here where while you can see I'm getting the news list, it's actually going to do a notification straight away of new items. I've got something a bit nasty going on there, so we might just connect that out. That notification shouldn't be appearing. There's actually a bug in the SharePoint framework at the moment that's causing that bit. But what I wanted to show is kind of a big example of pulling that all together. So this is Empired's current intranet, and this is not Office 365, but it pretty much looks like it, right, if you're familiar with how that piece looks. Just to talk through these different pieces, this what's happening is news coming from a SharePoint list, so one of those news kind of instances where you can author pieces. This is coming from my Delve, this is coming from my OneDrive, and this is a feed of groups. The reason we put all this stuff on a homepage is because to get there out of the box, it was one or two, three clicks away to each one of these features, and we're really trying to just put these things in the front of people's faces so they can see them. Equally, these menus, they're all built up from SharePoint lists as well, and I have the ability to edit my quick links and change them around. And then I'm getting these notifications. In this case, these notifications are also coming from SharePoint Office 365-based systems. So every time someone sends a new email to we1 at Empired, then I get this nice little item added to this here, and I can see there's a new one in there. And just to give you an idea of how those slots pieces work, you can see I've now switched across to UAT. All the data here is the same because I'm pulling the Graph APIs from my live business system. But you'll notice I've got just a few little bits of different functionality, like a link to add something new to edit the news, that we've added into this piece and not published it yet. And we've actually just used Azure AD to secure this away, so only people like myself that are actually involved in the testing of that piece can actually get through and connect through to that UAT site. Now, this stuff is really important because one of the problems that we often have with other systems is that if you're testing with different information, different authentication, and different data, you won't actually see a lot of the errors until you deploy to production, and then you're rapidly scrambling trying to fix these bugs. But because this is sitting connected to the same Azure AD tenancy, and it's using the same authentication methods as well as the same APIs to pull production data into this particular instance, I can do a comprehensive UAT, and then I can switch it to production where I'm very confident that it all works. You'll see, so all these items here, the cards, a lot of the icons, and even a lot of the branding and colours have been pulled across with that Office UI fabric that I mentioned to be able to provide an integrated branded experience so that our end users don't really know that they're actually using a separate application on top of Office 365. When we click through to other pieces of the portal, they're just normal team sites with branding and things applied to make them look the same kind of way. So we've got that blend now of all these sites deployed using things like Office PMP to kind of get them set up and configured, as well as a fully custom website sitting on the front. And because it's a full website that's nice and custom, I can then use modern web frameworks, where you can see that it's applied a different sort of menu as we shrink down to those different screen sizes. Now, you can do some of those custom UI pieces on SharePoint Online natively, but it's often very difficult, and because of the level of change, the more you change the out-of-the-box branding, you run the risk that it might break over time. Whereas here, I'm disconnected from that because I'm just using the APIs to pull information from those systems, but I'm customising it in my own Azure tenancy that I control entirely, and I only deploy updates when I need to. I mentioned this is running on that S1 plan that we saw earlier, and so basically that's, you know, costing a very small amount per month for a 1,000-person company because this is client-side script, not using a lot of CPU or anything like that, but it allows me to connect through to everything I need, and we can actually modify it in a rapid manner. We'll flick back to some slides. All right, so some of the things that we need to do that is look at the PMP provisioning engine to do that SharePoint piece. But then we also have the same functionality from the Azure side of things. So within Azure, there's Azure Resource Manager, which allows you to actually browse to all the pieces of Azure that you've set up and have a look at how it's scripted. With each item actually in the Azure portal, when you scroll down, you can actually go through and actually, I forgot to show those pieces. In the portal over here, you'll actually see within the resource group, if I go to that one, for each of these bits and pieces, down here I see automation script. And this gives me the ability to work out, to give me the deployment script for all these bits and pieces. So a lot of the stuff that you saw with that initial demo where it's pulling through a whole bunch of different pieces of Azure, it's got a service bus, it's got a web app, it's got a logic app all involved. The deployment script for an intranet built on Office 365 solely, this is one that we use where, you know, you'll see it's nearly 1,000 lines of script just deploying all the fields and the sites and everything else we need. That Azure piece is 150 lines of script, and this is one of those kind of schemas that's been exported out of Azure as a JSON file to be able to deploy the bits and pieces by passing in parameters. So that's this script here that basically comes out. With Microsoft Graph, so the pieces that we wanted to show there, so this is the graph. They've recently updated the API Explorer. So it used to be a bit of a pain because to be able to use the API Explorer, you needed to be an admin in an Office 365 tenancy to do a lot of activities, and you really don't want to be giving, you know, most developers access to a fully functional Office 365 tenancy as an admin, unless it's their dev environment. Whereas here, you'll see now, this is actually using my demo tenancy. I haven't signed in at all. I'm in a completely different browser. And I can then actually just send off queries, and it will actually return the data to me here so I can work out what they are. And I can actually switch as well from the production API to the beta API. And as part of that, there's comprehensive information on all the different calls that I can do through there, and all the different methods as well. So you can see I've got users, OneDrive, Excel, all the different bits and pieces, groups, grabbing conversations right through. This section on the Microsoft site covers the authentication methods. So we're actually in a period of time at the moment where there's two different ways to authenticate to the Graph API. We have the Azure AD web version and the Azure AD V2 version. There's a little bit confusing to choose between the two. That's why I recommend going to this website, because you'll see down here we'll actually talk you through comparisons table by table to work out which one the best one is to use. So one of the common ones, for example, is that if you want to authenticate against personal sites, so you want to be able to access things through, you know, Hotmail or Gmail accounts, then you're going to have to use the newer API method. But if you want to use purely work or school accounts, the AD endpoint is going to work okay. But you'll also see that the newer version then doesn't quite do all the different pieces at this point in time. So we're actually using, in our case, the Azure AD authentication library. We're not using V2 because we didn't need the ability to authenticate any of those older users. And you'll see then for each of the different technologies you might use, there's a different client library that you can use, and even server-based libraries as well. So I can grab .NET libraries. In our case, we're actually using the JavaScript library to provide that authentication experience through, pull the data from the Graph API, and actually connect that on through. And you'll see that that's quite rapidly updated. So, you know, they have the examples here, and it's actually being updated on quite a rapid period of time. So generally that, like I said earlier, that authentication piece is probably the trickiest piece. So once you get over that hurdle using these samples, you can then pull a lot of information through and get it rapidly deployed. Look at the branding, so the Office UI fabric, and also look at the SharePoint framework if you're doing anything in the Office 365 development space. One of the things that I like to highlight is the Office 365 PMP team has actually provided samples on how to use a lot of the tools and the methods that's coming with the SharePoint framework on older versions of SharePoint. They demonstrate doing that right back to SharePoint 2010. So if you're developing on one of those older environments, you can still use a lot of those techniques to make sure your portal and your skill sets ready for when you connect through. But for most portals, it's not just about pulling data from Office 365, right? We've all got a lot of different cloud-based and on-premises systems, and this is where Azure has some really good capability as well, as does SharePoint. So some of the options that we have is if you want to grab data that's on-premises and push it into things like that online search engine and pull the files through, make things searchable, we can use SharePoint 2016 as basically a cloud appliance. So you don't need it to, you know, necessarily be in use for anything else. You could just install it for this particular purpose. And what it can do is it can actually pull information from a bunch of different sources, so SharePoint 2007, 2010, 2013, file shares, even third-party connectors, and push that through into the SharePoint Online Index to make it searchable up there and provide it as part of that experience. It will preserve the security context of that, so same with any kind of search system these days. If you can't see the content, you won't be able to see it in there. And it will actually just push the metadata of that information across into Office 365, so it doesn't necessarily pick up all that kind of content and push it through. But it means that we start to get some of that Azure Graph support on top of that information, even though it might be sitting on-premises within your organisation. But it's not just about SharePoint. We've also got the capability to do the Graph API for Exchange now. So they've actually just launched that recently. If you're actually up to date, so it must be Your mailboxes must be on Exchange 2016 CU3 servers, and basically you really have to have most of your farm updated to Exchange 2016 to be able to make this work. But then we can actually use the Exchange parts of the Graph API against those on-premises servers and mailboxes as well, rather than just the mailboxes that are in the cloud. That's a nice new one that's been released. But then we also get all these managed connectors. So briefly, when we're in Logic Apps, you could see there was a whole bunch of systems we could connect through to. And I was actually connecting them up as myself, so providing authentication credentials as well. But as part of Azure, we actually get managed connectors as well, where there's heaps of connectors to all kinds of business systems. Now, I've got a BizTalk background, and I guess because of that, whenever I hear about systems integration, I get really stressed and nervous about this massive long project. But we've used a bunch of these inbuilt connections in a matter of days to do proof of concepts of pulling information from on-premises systems with authentication being pushed through. It's really quite amazing how you can push this kind of capabilities through. In fact, in most cases now, we're spending longer kind of explaining to the security team and everyone else involved that we want to do this than we actually need to spend on configuring up these bits and pieces. So we get both, you know, inbuilt connectors and also the ability to do our own connectors and API connections as well. And to give you an idea of some of the different connections, that's a big, long list. So there's quite a lot of business systems there. You'll see it's a good blend of things like the SaaS system, so a lot of things online. And this is not even all of them, by the way. This is just like the most common ones on the slide. But even into really traditional EDI kind of Edifact, those kind of systems as well. We can actually pull all that information through. And we can even leave some of it in a hybrid state. So if you've already got something like a BizTalk server or other pieces in there, you can actually use that as part of this integration story and push and pull information through. Then we can add a lot of different capabilities on top. So, you know, we're trying to pull through all of those business systems. We can show them on the homepage. We can, you know, those little indicators you saw on our portal, we've got little bouncing balls of new things. You could pull that from your learning management system. You could notify somebody when there's a new payslip that's arrived that they need to look at. Maybe someone works in a kind of support function and they need to know there's a new urgent item in their support queue. And that way they've got a really interactive portal then that's actually providing them business value, and they're going to see things like the news and the policies, procedures and all those other pieces that you need to actually interact with them as well, because they're actually spending a lot of time in that portal day to day. We also get access though to all the other really cool bits. So I just wanted to hopefully show one more demo. Now, you've probably kind of got the idea that that most people are pretty excited about bots if you've been to some of the settings here, sessions here. And I think they're a really great feature as well. And so I've been starting to think about how could you use them in a portal context, right? So how could you provide something that's interactive and would actually be useful? This entire demo, I didn't write a single line of code for it. I've just done a bunch of configuration. So there's a service called Q&A Maker. And the way Q&A Maker works is if I go in here and edit it, I just upload an FAQ. I can actually upload it in a specific format. I can actually point this at a website, or I can actually type my own items in here. So you'll see I've got your basics. If you say hi, say hello back. Where are the policies and procedures might be a question someone wants to ask a portal. You know, a bunch of other questions you can put in here. And then I can actually test this in this interface itself, and I can use that to provide a bunch of alternatives to various questions that it's going to answer backwards and forwards. So some people might call things procedures, other people call them policies. We want it to answer with the same information backwards and forwards. Then, once I publish it, I then have the ability to tie this up to a number of different channels. And the first channel that we'll actually look at is this web chat down here. So when I implied the web chat channel in there, I can then go and get an embed code that allows me just to embed this bot into basically a normal piece of functionality. And so we'll look at this very boring SharePoint site here that I've just used a script editor web part, embedded my bot, and let's hopefully it'll talk back to us in a minute. So you think about these scenarios where people say search doesn't work, right? One of the really, really common things that we get. I can now start to have the system have these conversations with people when they're confused. Here's a link to the latest policies. Click and I've gone to the latest policy. And I can start to add these questions over time as people are chatting backwards and forwards. As I'm hearing, as the HR department perhaps, people saying I don't know where various things are, I can go into that Q&A maker or, you know, have someone technical do it for me, but it's simple as adding the questions and answers, hitting save and retrain, and then there's another question this is going to respond back with. And the ability to put this on the page was literally as simple with a standard SharePoint team site. Under here, there's an HTML field security capability. In there, this controls what I can embed as an external domain. And so because this particular one comes from Microsoft Stream, I just had to add that as being permitted. And then this particular piece here, you'll see literally is just a script editor web part with a couple of lines of code that was provided for me from that embed piece. So I've just got an iframe in here, right, with a particular config to connect up to that particular bot. Again, I've shown an example on an Office 365-based site, but that could be any one of your business systems. It could be any portal that you've actually put this piece of functionality in. Then I've also, with newer team sites, it's a little bit different. So unfortunately, with the SharePoint framework, the newer style websites, so the ones associated with groups and the new modern pages, we actually can't use embed codes in them at the moment. They're quite limited in the capabilities that we can use there. So with that particular one, it's a little bit more complicated to tie it up. What I've actually used in that particular case is we're using this direct line. So with direct line, we basically get a secret key that we can tie up to, and I'm actually using a JavaScript direct line library to be able to pull that piece out. Let's just see if it's up and running. That should be. Let's see if it's switched over. Nope. I think it's just loading up a little bit slowly. Here we go. So that's loaded my SharePoint workbench up. So the way it works is once I've loaded it up and I can debug it locally, I can then actually switch across, and I then have the... So this is again me running locally. Nope. Don't think... Did I launch the wrong sample? Oh, no. I did too. Oops, sorry. I'll do that again. Sorry, we'll just get it back up and running. And obviously, I'm just running in a debug scenario here. Once the SharePoint framework's actually out of its current RC state and into full production, we wouldn't have to jump through this kind of deployment step here. We'd have this permanently configured and set up in that particular gallery as a deployment artifact. But now we'll get it here. We have our bot framework, so now when we refresh our real workbench that's sitting in the production site, it will then allow us to pull the bot framework through. We chuck our direct line secret into there. And then typically the first time we try to chat to that little bot, it's a little bit slow, but it should hopefully respond back in a few minutes. And then we get the same behavior. And so as I mentioned earlier, I've configured it to actually respond to a heap of different scenarios. So, you know, I can type the word policy in, I can type where are our policies and procedures, I can type policies question mark, and it will always just refer, you know, it will always throw back that same response. If I actually put in just something random, it's just going to tell me that it actually doesn't have a response for that. So just like a normal, basically, bot in there, that it won't be able to interpret it. But to get that up and running, again, that was a... Whoops. So that's basically client-side code that's actually chatting through. So really quite simple. All I'm really doing is pulling through that particular direct line framework, as I said, tying it up to the direct line query, and then I can basically just throw a conversation backwards and forwards. And, you know, I've done basically no styling on that. It's pretty basic kind of little bot there. You could obviously style it up. You can make it a lot more interactive. And you can have a heap more of functionality that you would tie in with that. So I think that's one of the really exciting things that we can start to do to get a bit more of an interactive portal experience, where not only are we having, you know, your normal things. So we've got your interaction, we've got all these kind of icons coming from line of business systems if you want them to. But on top of your regular search experience, we can now actually add a conversational element as well. And I think for a lot of people that will become very important as we move forward. We could obviously have that pop out as well. And if at any point in time that I want to add new questions, I can just go back into that bot framework and actually add it in. Now, I've used basically the most simple version of the bot framework, which is this Q&A maker. Like I said, all I do is really upload basically a file format into it, or type my own questions and answers. But there's whole sessions at this conference that you'll see on bots about how you can make these really intelligent. You can use a lot of the other features in there. But, you know, in our context, I think this adds a lot of value. Even if even in your simple support scenario, so, you know, people have an issue. You know, often the first troubleshooting and debugging steps for any managed services help desk are your typical basic questions. You know, have you turned it off and on again? Are you logged in? What version of the browser are you running in? Imagine all those questions backwards and forwards with a bot, and then once you get to the point where, okay, I've tried your basic troubleshooting steps, I actually need to talk to a person now, it's actually transferring you across. So I could have tied this bot into Skype instead, right? And I've actually got this conversational experience backwards and forwards. And the good thing from an end user point of view is, even though I know, you know, I do know that I'm talking to a bot because I can see it, it's giving me a good experience because I'm getting an automatic response and I'm getting, you know, that kind of SLA, but my service desk or my HR department or the people that have to field these queries aren't having to answer the same things over and over and over again. They're saving a lot of time in their day because the system's actually answering backwards and forwards to them for all these bits and pieces. So there's a lot of different pieces that we've actually run through. We'll just switch back and do a bunch of recap. Yep. All right, so there's heaps of different concepts. One of the things that I really want to get across is that Office 365 has a heap of awesome native capabilities. You will have seen them in a lot of the other sessions on groups and all the different other pieces in there. So we see a lot of our organisations using just even bits and pieces of that, right? So, you know, like I said towards the start, you might just want to grab the video portal and you might want to tie that into your on-premises intranet. That Graph API that I showed you can give you that capability. Maybe people are just using their OneDrive because you want to move your personal storage location up into Office 365 to save on storage space on premises. You can still tie that into your on-premises intranet and give them that view of clicking through and seeing their latest documents sitting there on the homepage or sitting there on their personal site of your intranet, regardless of what technology it is. If you want a new modern look and feel, the Azure App Service is an excellent way to do it. You can actually just start off with that free plan, and you can use that for developing up really quite easily. But, you know, when we looked at that particular app service, the shared plan, the one that costs, you know, less than I spend on coffee a month, you can see that I get the deployment slots. I can switch code live. For people that are doing SharePoint development where a deployment is always super stressful, that new model of working against a deployment slot hooked up to live data that no one else except for your test users can see is a really, really great feature. But I can also switch across with the Graph API to using all those client-side APIs. When I'm moving across into this different world, then I can grab things like the Office UI Fabric to make sure my branding works. Microsoft spent a lot of time doing research with end users to make these things look very familiar. And if I'm writing custom code, but I apply that Office UI Fabric over the top, then I instantly get a bit of that usability and brand recognition without having to reinvent the wheel and, you know, worry about all the different things that I'm going to do. And it's very frustrating to users if they have different icons for all the common activities they're used to. But not only can we use that Azure App Service to provide a bit more scalability and provide that custom experience where I can brand any way I want and I can really have full control over what's going to pop up on that homepage, but I can also use those Azure capabilities to connect through to on-premises systems. Sounds very difficult, but as I mentioned, it's really quite quick and easy generally with a lot of these business systems, even very traditional business systems, to set them up in a hybrid way, use those hybrid connections to pass information and authentication through, grab your on-premises data and then display it on portals like this or other applications that you're actually using. And then I want to start thinking about how we make these things interactive. Easy to use and interactive are really the things we need to focus on. You know, you saw at the start how easy it is to edit those modern pages, how easily we can provide those capabilities of Power Apps and Logic Apps or Flow to be able to provide your basic, you know, simple little business apps that end users can configure. But then we can also allow them to have conversations through things like bots and integrate them into these kind of portals. And it's pretty amazing that most of this technology that you've seen, none of these features I don't think even existed two years ago, right? So this is just all this brand new functionality that's flooding through into the Office 365 and Azure world, and it's going to keep coming. So the quicker you can get on board and learn some of these techniques and actually start using them even if you are in on-premises scenarios, the more value you'll get kind of for your business users. So if you are on-prem, I want you to have a look at those Office 365 PMP libraries if you're sitting on an older version of SharePoint. Start using them to try to automate some of your deployments of sites. Have a look at the examples there of how you use client-side code in your existing portal to be able to pull through information there so that you can actually connect through and start using those new techniques, because there is a lot of tool chain changes in that SharePoint framework that you need to get across. But if you start piece by piece and get moving with this now, you'll have a lot of time to get across it. So I guess they're the main pieces that I wanted to show. Obviously, things are going to be recorded on Channel 9, and if you can put your evaluations in, I think there's still prizes you can win through doing that. So I'll open it up to questions. Any questions?
Do you think that the modern UI in your experience is ready for enterprise production use?
Do I think that the modern UI is ready for enterprise production use? Yeah, I do. So, you know, with Office 365, we do have a lot of different UI experiences. And it's really interesting because I find, as a SharePoint person, that I'm really frustrated with it and everything's moved, right? I'm like, where's my cog gone? I don't know how to get to settings anymore. And it's taken me quite a while to get used to it. But I've sat with what I call real people and seen how easy it is for them to use the system. And they're generally finding the modern UI very, very quick and easy to use. So I know as a technical person, a lot's changed for me, but they seem to love it. And I guess that's the primary audience for most of these capabilities. It is initially when things were launched, so particularly when the modern lists of modern libraries came out, that did knock out a lot of customizations. That's actually better now, where it detects that if you've got a JS link applied to your library, it won't actually load the modern UI, it'll stick with the legacy UI. So things like that will help. But equally, there's also a lot you can't do in this new modern UI. So, yeah, it's ready for production enterprise use, but it might not be your entire intranet. SharePoint framework, even in this RC stage, so that's likely what we'll get when it goes generally available, I can build web parts like you saw a widget. I can't do a full single page app. So that whole intranet, if I wanted to build that, that will not be part of the general availability release. I can only do pieces. So if I need a full control of UI, I'm not going to build a modern page. I'm going to use a publishing page or an Azure page to do it. Any other questions? Yep. How do you secure a bot in Skype? Go to a bot session, I'm not sure. I've only done them for Teams, web chat and direct. I haven't used a Skype one. There's definitely the bot I ran is basically anything that hits that request with my secret key, it'll actually respond to it. And I guess it'll depend on what your bot does as well as to what level of security you're going to want to put on top. Mine just chats backwards and forwards, you know. If you happen to grab my private key and connect up to it, okay, have a nice time chatting to my bot. Obviously, if it was actually something that responded with HR information, you know, payroll information, it has to be a lot more secure. Other questions? Yep.
Is React a requirement as part of this? Are you using React as part of your
code? Yes. So the SharePoint framework is all built on React. There are samples out there that allow you to swap across to Angular and knock out. But I guess for me, Microsoft's betting pretty big and giving us all the samples in React. So that's my default. And then if I need to do something different, I'd suggest about the other ones. With Angular, because it likes control over everything, it's probably more suited. So the intranet homepage I showed you actually uses Angular. Full page app, I've got control, there's no SharePoint involved. Trying to do that with Angular and SharePoint involved is really, really painful. In fact, there's some guys over there they worked on some of the Dell Nod and say it's terrible. But React is a lot easier in that. So, no, don't have to use it. SharePoint framework, I'd suggest using it rather than trying to get things more complicated. Other questions?
Yep. You mentioned that SharePoint 2016 is an appliance.
Yep. Yep, so the question was, am I seeing people use SharePoint 2016 purely as an appliance, setting up separately to their main farm? Absolutely, and in fact, a couple of my customers that are here are doing exactly that, mainly because they've got an older SharePoint farm. They've got a SharePoint 2010 or 2013 farm with bucket loads of customizations on it. And, you know, lots of workflows, forms, all kinds of things that they just don't have the time or the money to replace right now, but they want to use groups, video, some of the other pieces. And in their case, they're dropping in the SharePoint 2016 appliance just to provide that search in between. That's the most common scenario we're seeing it in. Obviously, it would be great if they could upgrade it all, but it's just it's years of development they've had on their intranet. So, the search appliance provides a nice hybrid in between. And Microsoft's been pretty open on the fact that they're not getting rid of the on-premises versions anytime soon, so there's no problem staying in that state for a long time if you need to.
Is there any other logical target? Like, that was the cloud SSA, right? So what else would you do if you were to have the same scenario, lots of content, lots of development on-prem, and you wanted to start connecting the right pieces? Cloud SSA is what you'd start with. What would be number two?
Yep, so question number two, if you're connecting these kind of things. So really, wow, that's an it depends, doesn't it? It sounds like a simple answer, but I like to focus on whatever's going to provide the business the most value. So the most common one that we find is we show people groups and they don't want team sites anymore. And usually team sites might not be where you've customised a lot anyway, so that can be quite easy to kind of create some bits and pieces across there. But yeah, it really depends on what you've got in that setup. We do have people that are moving, don't have forms and workflow capabilities, so they're going across for just Power Apps and Flow to use that piece as well. The key thing though, I think, is to tie some of the navigation together as well. You don't want people to get really, stuck in one environment and not being able to get back through the rest. SharePoint 2016 actually does have a hybrid managed metadata service now that you can use to push metadata terms, and you can tie some of that into navigation if you need to. But generally, we're building just those navigation links in to kind of connect it backwards and forwards a bit easier. Cool. Any other final? Yeah, come on. Yep, how do we manage navigation? Yeah, it's a really interesting question. We used to have, mega menus and all these fancy things. Now, I know I went really quickly through the navigation of our website, our intranet, but it's like basically five buttons. So we're actually not building hierarchical navigation for a lot of our things because we find that structures change so much. Names of departments change, names of sites change, everything changes. We're actually just running that navigation off a SharePoint list that a non-technical user can configure and put the URLs through of how to connect through to it. And what that does is it basically takes people to a landing page that then rolls up a bunch of other information. There are a bunch of people like me that just search for everything. I never use a menu, so, I'm really fine. I just go to Delve or search in the traditional search way and get to everything. But most users do need a level of navigation. We're just not creating those big hierarchies. And so, if you've got on-prem and Office 365, it can be as simple as just providing home buttons that flick between the two that are logically connected. People are okay with seeing different menu items as long as it's in a logical place. So often we'll find that people navigate into a collaboration area and maybe they have to click home to get back to policies and procedures or those kind of things. If it's a context switch, that works okay. But yeah, if it's the same content, you want it to go through. Most common thing, like I said, SharePoint list navigation that's manually edited instead of these really, really smart ways of auto-generating it up these days. You've still got the capability to auto-generate it up, do it off term sets and all those kind of things. You just find it changes so quickly. Giving it to non-technical users is a bit easier. Other questions? InfoPath forms, do they work on SharePoint Online? Yep, they still work exactly the same as they worked on-prem. So it's a little bit of it depends on what your version of it works is because, for example, if you try to load it on a mobile device, it doesn't work, which is just an InfoPath feature. It doesn't scale. It doesn't do any of those kind of pieces. So we do find that while the functionality is there, if people are using the mobile apps for everything else, they're not going to be able to connect through to InfoPath. But as long as you've got people using desktop browsers, it still works and it's still there. Interesting question. Do I see people migrating to Power Apps for some things? Yep. Power Apps are relatively simple. Certainly as a programming model, InfoPath was always backwards with a lot of its conditions and other things that it did. Power Apps is a lot more logical to use. But it really depends on the complexity. Like I've seen InfoPath used for all manner of ungodly things. Sometimes you're just better off with a native web app. The way the JavaScript libraries and everything work these days, you may just build custom and it's a lot quicker than trying to bend a product, but it's really dependent on the actual use of it. Definitely Power Apps is a good place to start. Cool. All right, looks like we're pretty much out of questions, so thank you very much for your time.